Welcome to our Friday Five Live podcast hosted by Meg Foster. Meg has spent 20 years in higher education focused on student success initiatives and working in areas such as orientation, faculty development, online learning, student leadership, and first-year initiatives.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Friday. So grateful to see many of you hopping in. And just as a quick kind of housekeeping reminder, we love the chat here in Friday Five Live. So while I've got some prepared questions for Dr. Cooper for Shannon today, please don't hesitate. Put your questions in the chat and we will weave those into conversation. And quite frankly, we were having a fantastic conversation before we hit the record button. So I am very excited about continuing our discussion. The complexity that is the work we're doing in higher education. We actually kicked off our podcast in April of 2020, right? So a month into pandemic shutdown. And we have focused, kept coming back to mental health needs, both with our students, but I think it's also important for us to have a space to talk about that with the faculty and staff doing the work at our colleges and universities. And so Shannon and I were talking about this term of caregiver and caregiver fatigue, which is something I think we often associate with those of us who are working maybe with children or the elderly or people who are ill. But it also, I think, is a term that is getting adopted more and more by those of us who are working, you know, to support students in their continued success at our institutions. And that is a level and layered complexity. You know, I think we had had some hope that maybe as we came out of pandemic, that things would normalize, for lack of a better term. There are good reports coming out that the data is showing us that teens are demonstrating less rates of anxiety and depression. So I think there is certainly positivity kind of bubbling up, and Shannon can certainly speak to that, you know, more than I can. But I also know that we're being asked to do more and more at our institutions as we look to support students. Things like wraparound services, providing basic needs. And so that's kind of the foundation for our conversation today. We always want to listen to our listeners. And so this is a topic that had kind of come up repeatedly that folks had asked us to address. So I am not an expert on these topics by any stretch, but I was very lucky to get to have Dr. Shannon Cooper join us today. So thank you so much, Shannon. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Meg. I'm really happy to be here, and I'm looking forward to having a conversation with you all, you and folks on the call about this topic. And one of the things, so I just want to provide a framework. Mm-hmm. And so I want to talk about these are common factors that lead to stress, right? So caregiver fatigue is related to stress. So just in general, some of the things that we know that lead to stress are uncertainty. We live in a lot of uncertainty, right? Especially now. Lack of information, a perceived loss of control, conflict, unsatisfied emotional needs. And one that is very, very important is a lack of connection, relationships, and community, right? That sense of belongingness. These are some of the top factors that we know that lead to stress. And so not just our students, but even employees may be feeling one or more of these factors, because there's a lot going on in the world, right? And so in our nature, we are biopsychosocial creatures. So our biology, our heart, our lungs, liver, kidney, right? And then psychologically, our mind, so our feelings, our emotions. And then social, our relationships, personal, and also our work relationships. That's what we're composed of, okay? And so when we think about stress, we often talk about it in the negative, but I was sharing with Meg earlier that I was feeling anxious and stressed, and we jumped on the call early, and talking with her and her colleague, my stress level went from here, right, from about a, let's say a 7, down to say a 4 or a 3. And so positive aspects of stress, it enables us to concentrate, It increases our performance, and it also energizes us into action. So it motivates us. Those are positive aspects of stress, right? And I'm feeling very motivated, and ready to have this conversation with you all. And then some of the negative aspects, you've heard of emotional dysregulation, right? Your feelings, your emotions are all over the place, not feeling like they're not within your control. They show up at times when they probably shouldn't in terms of your negative emotions. When we're not feeling good, when we're feeling stressed, it impairs our ability to interact with others, right? So we can have impaired interpersonal effectiveness with our colleagues, with our coworkers, and with students, right? And so there's a possibility of performing poorly. Okay, so those are some of the negative aspects. And now we see students showing up in the classrooms and support services. Oftentimes, they have several of the factors leading to stress, and so they act out in ways that are not conducive to providing a good service. And when I say service, I'm also talking about teaching, because that's also a service that we provide to students. Okay. And so so that's just the framework. So, Meg, I don't know if you
That's
want to ask
really,
questions or.
yeah. I think that's, really helpful to kind of give us this foundation about the topic, today. And so what I really heard you say is there are these things that we know that are factors in identifying in creating stress. And we are living, again, I just want to come back to the, I think I certainly felt this in my higher ed world that we were like, all right, we got through the pandemic. We're gonna be good. It's gonna be okay. We can do this. And then it's just like the tsunami continues to hit, right? And this year has been, I feel like, just as uncertain, or if not more uncertain, than year one of the pandemic as far as the world work that we do in higher ed. And so I think about how we're continued to ask to show up for our students, but I feel like sometimes what I'm hearing from, the people that I interact with kind of all over the country in higher education, that sometimes we don't get that same, nobody's saying to us, hey, let's check in with you. Are you feeling regulated? Do you feel like you have a sense of belonging here? How are you feeling about the uncertainty that is taking place? And I'm sure we all know folks who have been, have lost jobs, lost grants. I mean, I can think of a handful of people off the top of my head. So, yeah.
And you have to take care of home first, right? So home meaning the people that are employed on the campus. Check in, it's like check in with you hear the saying, check in with your strong friends. Check in with your folks that your employees, because they are also humans that also have things that are happening in time as the students, right? Maybe some of the same things. And so it's important to check in. And so when you're thinking about the campus, the colleges and the universities, Meg, we were just talking about hidden expectations. And one of the things when I was working as an administrator, the faculty and staff would always want talk to administration about, we want transparency, we want transparency. And sometimes things move so quickly that you may, as an administrator, think you're being transparent, but you're not. And so, for example, this caregiving, this new, because I was asking you, Meg, is this a new phenomenon? Because when I was there, and I left in 2022, the word caregiving was not a thing. At least it wasn't talked about. And so in just what, 3 years, it is now a thing. And moving through the pandemic, we didn't move through, we kind of jumped over. And so people are still struggling. And we live in a time where we've made feel normal feelings abnormal, that you have to take something so you don't feel pain. When, what we know as mental health professionals is life does include pain and suffering, that none of us can escape that. And so when we're not allowed to feel and express that, there are people who lost family members and friends and colleagues during the pandemic, and now we're just supposed to go on. And that doesn't include the things that were happening for folks before the pandemic, because a lot of people were not doing well, including many of our students were not doing well pre-pandemic. So the pandemic just exacerbated what was already happening. And for our work colleagues, there were things that were happening in their lives pre-pandemic as well, and those things may have been exacerbated. So to believe that, well, that thing is over, now we can just move on, it's important to move through. And what that looks like looks different for every institution, for every individual, for groups of people, culturally and personally, interpersonally. That all looks different. But we're expected to just, okay, let's get back to normal. What is that? Right? What is that?
We were talking before we got started to there are these hidden expectations, and I was sharing with Shannon that where I teach has adopted this concept that we're going to be, and I'm hearing this more and more, seeing it in conference presentations, seeing it in literature, this term of being having a culture of care at our campuses. So I think for a while we were going to be student centered institutions. We were going to be communities of belonging for our students. And it feels like there's been this kind of evolution, and maybe somebody on the call has more insight into that than I do. But now being this culture of care, and what does that mean? But what are the kind of hidden expectations that might come with that? So just curious, we kind of talked about emotional in the question. It sort of speaks to, emotional labor and student crises, which there's so many of. I guess in your examination of higher ed and your experiences and work, what are these sort of unique things that exist that kind of pile on, if that makes sense, as I think institutions try to continue to live into being caring spaces.
We talked earlier, Megan. I think the expectation of not so much in colleges and universities, but in 4 years, but certainly in two year institutions, this expectation that, and I really can, and I'd like you to kind of also share, Meg, because I'm in California. So what happens is we get there are all these initiatives and the hidden expectation that the community colleges will solve all of the troubles in California, in the country, right? And so, but it's not even funded to do those things, and people aren't trained to do that kind of work. We talked about wraparound services, and my suggestion was, when I was in the system, is what about building partnerships and collaborations with community-based organizations who are trained and funded to provide wraparound services? The community college is not trained for that. Now, bringing people on that are trained to do that, that's great. But to ask faculty and classified professionals to do this work in addition, because it's in addition to doing their job, it's unreasonable. And that's a hidden expectation. And when you talk about burnout, right, that certainly leads to burnout, because folks aren't even provided training to do this kind of work. And when you are, having worked in social services myself and being a psychologist, part of our training, a large part of our training throughout the years was focused on boundaries, because we work with people that who suffer. And so we have to learn how not to take on their emotional pain and have boundaries and not engage in relationships that we can't sustain. And when you're not trained to in healthy boundaries, you can find yourself getting overly involved with students in a way that you didn't intend to. Right. So you're doing things because maybe the person reminds you of somebody yourself or somebody you know, or you just really care about a particular student. But the thing is, it's unlikely that you can sustain that relationship. So you set students up for a disappointment because it's not something you can sustain. And you will get tired and not want to do it anymore. And then what? So this hidden expectation to do more with less resources is something that is very common. Has that been your experience, Meg?
Absolutely, yes. And I mean, I do think institutions, I can only speak from kind of what I see in our system, are trying to provide training. I had really actually, strangely enough, right before shutdown, I got to attend trauma-informed care training. And I don't know where this initiative went in our system because I think the pandemic interrupted it, but the goal was that everybody employed in our community college system, and we only have 23 in Virginia. It's not like California, not as big, but the goal was that everybody employed would go through this training because the idea was what would our campuses and then the ripple effect in our communities look like if we all approached our work from this from this foundation, of trauma-informed care, which certainly makes a lot of sense with the communities that we're serving in the 2-year spaces, right? And again, I'm not sure kind of where whatever happened with that.
Well, it's a great idea. It's a great idea. However, so here I am. I am a math instructor, teaching my class, preparing my lectures, teaching my class. I'm teaching to a broad variety of students with different skills, abilities, and experiences, right? So I have to, because the beauty of community college is that it is open and that people can take classes and you don't have to meet prerequisites ne necessarily. So here I am, I'm coming to teach my class, and you're asking me to do trauma-informed care. I've gone to a training. Well, maybe I did, but I have classes, so maybe I couldn't go, right? Or I'm in student support services, and my flow is 8 to 5. So I would have to somehow arrange to go to this training, and then I'm supposed to provide trauma-informed care based on one training that I've had. What are the chances that I'm going to be able to do that? But it's now an expectation that I'm now a provider of trauma-informed care, right? And so, and in student services, so you have faculty teaching to a broad variety of students with different abilities, right? And they have to teach all of these students. And then you have student support services where there's a constant pivot depending on what the new initiative is, right? And these same students that come from the classroom, also in student services, they may not have had great or even good positive experiences with educational institutions. So they show up to the counter and they don't behave in a way that is expected. But I'm supposed to, as a trauma-informed provider now, caregiver, I'm supposed to know how to engage with a student who has had some pretty significant life challenges with, and how do I do that, especially when I may be the only person at the counter? So you see how that those hidden expectations, how they can show up and contribute to emotional labor and burnout and things and fatigue, because this is not these are not a These are not one-off situations. These are pretty common situations that faculty and staff face on a daily basis.
Chelsea Hinckley has said 100%, it's great to be trauma informed, but that doesn't make me a certified licensed mental health provider. And I was sharing with Shannon that in our system, community colleges do not have counseling centers, and that for a long time, that really it kind of bothered me, because I saw, right? I mean, I teach 100 students a semester, I saw the need, how many of our students need mental health support services. But as I've kind of aged into my professional ex practice, I just see a lot of it is it is the and we have very close really important community to our campuses on a regular basis. So I think that does help to we're addressing the problem using the resources that exist in our and not a problem, but we're addressing those challenges using the resources that already exist versus expecting that we can provide those services within an institution that is already, providing basic needs and has a food pantry and, housing and addressing, I mean, just
And it's
how
stretched.
can we
Here.
work with those?
Yeah, it's a system that I know in California, right? And it sounds like in Virginia, it's stretched. And again, you have employees that signed up for a particular position. And so as things keep adding and added on, but nothing is being removed, right? So in addition to the position you signed up for, now you're adding more responsibilities, but you're not removing responsibilities. And so people are expected to do all and everything and be all and everything, and that's just not possible. So people start to peter out, right? The again, that emotional labor is high, and it seems like it continues because now you're a caregiver. So you're just not only trauma informed, now you're expected to be a caregiver. And it makes sense that folks are feeling fatigued. And that even includes administrators, right? Trying to make it includes it's the whole system. And so how does that, how do we work to build a community, a sense of belonging for students, but also for the employees? These are people that show up every day to work. And so they need to feel a sense of belonging too. And so that piece about you and I talked about, Meg, about the communication and being transparent and really being intentional about being transparent, because I think as a former administrator, on the student services side, things were thrown like, oh, this, and it's really hard to keep track of things. But what makes it hard to just slow things down so that you can bring people along? Because it's not that employees don't want to be supportive to students on student services or the instructional side, but when they're not brought along and they're voluntold or whatever, that doesn't feel good. And the natural instinct of a human is to resist, right? And so what would make it possible to slow down and say, hey, wait a minute, right? Even so, something as simple as, because I was sharing with Meg, I asked my husband, who works in community colleges, what does caregiving mean to you? So if, and he had a he It was very different, right? So if you were to ask even people on the call, I don't know that there'd be a unified answer of what caregiving is, but yet we're talking about caregiving fatigue. So.
Well, and I think that's a beautiful segue, and I love the chat that Robbie's sharing at his institution. They do have a, fantastic student counseling center with staff who provide a training, and that's just it's. I know there's some great models out there, and we actually had a podcast I think over the summer where we brought in some folks who had been at I think Stony Brook, and they were talking about their model. At their institution with supporting, oh, sorry, Robbie, she, her, supporting faculty and staff with regards to kind of being doing the work in this space and in a positive way. So I think that's a great transition to this question around, are there models, structures, programs? How can we, provide better support as we pour in? I just feel like we're continued to, we're pouring into students and we're so cognizant of their needs. And I just know people are doing such good, important work in that space. But how can our administrative teams, right, at those higher levels, help create those structures so that my financial aid staff, who's manning the front desk, right, dealing with the onslaught of happy or unhappy people who are stressed about those processes, our advising team who's hearing about it, all those folks, how can we create those structures within our institutions?
I
And
think,
sorry, I
oh,
just want to say
go
one
ahead.
thing. And if you're somebody on the call listening in today and you're not in that role at your institution, right? I think sometimes we're like, oh, well, this has to come from these administration teams. Just be thinking about how, what are the differences, right? We can, impacts we can make, even if our role is perhaps not as high on the organizational chart. Yeah, sorry.
No, thank you for that question. I'm a big fan of the funnel, right? So we don't need to start here. We start at the bottom of the funnel where it's small, right? And so taking bite size, because you can do things, because there are so many things that you're not going to have control over. The budget, what if you have a board of trustees, what they, they're just what the legislators, you don't have control over that. But you can have control in your department, your unit, right? And this thing about creating community, it starts at home, building relationships. That starts at home. So get your house together first, right? So there's that part. And culturally, I know here in education, there is this unspoken expectation of unlimited availability in the guise of going above and beyond, okay? And we don't have unlimited availability, and this is where boundaries come in yet again, okay? Because we cannot expect for our employees to take on the emotional burden of our students. And here's the thing about students. Your students have a lot going on, let's say, in their lives. Yet they're able to show up and go to class. And so when you're looking at it from a strength-based perspective, capitalize on students' ability to show up, right? Help them recognize their own autonomy. So when you're thinking about, well, what are things that we can do? Because what I was sharing with you, Meg, in my field, we know for a fact there will never be enough mental health professionals to serve the number of people, and that's outside of the campus, right? That will serve people that are in need. So we have to think about other ways. And one of the things that works well in educational settings, and the research comes out of K-12, but groups, right? So I know a lot of campuses have peer mentor programs. Those are great. Encouraging students, even in the 2-year space, to get involved in student life. Student life creates a sense of belonging, even if you don't have residential halls on your, because some of our colleges, a few have residences on the campus. But even if you don't have that, and yes, students are transient, it's a commuter campus, you can still create a sense of belonging, right? And so help students want to engage. And it's important that we don't focus on what their deficits or what they don't have, but focus on their assets. And for me, Meg, I would always think, well, this student showed up and there's this, and this going on in their life, and they're still here. That's a strength, because there were times when I think, I don't know if I could have shown up given what's happening to this student. If it was happening to me, I don't know if I could have shown up. So capitalizing on student strengths. And their ability to become, if they are leaders, enhance that. If they're not, help them become leaders, and help other students, and not take on all of this as if it's just the employee's responsibility, but help students build community. They want that. And so that relieves some of the emotional labor that employees tend to take on. Students are, they have The hours that they're on campus, they have more hours off campus, and they're living their lives somehow. So we are not the savior of students. They don't need to be saved. They want to be served to get through, to graduate, right? To gain a certificate, to transfer. Those are the things that they want to do. And so how do we help support them do that and give them agency and build their autonomy to participate actively in making sure that they accomplish their goals?
Feel like you just unpacked all for us there. I love the reminder about looking at it from a strengths-based perspective, because I think that as we grow weary and tired, it is harder and harder to have that lens, right? I think that's human nature, right? You get to the deficit part real fast, and not thinking about it from that strengths-based perspective. And so what I think I just heard you say is that to reduce some of this emotional labor, it is okay, it is appropriate, it is developmental to give that agency and that opportunity to our students. We're going to build the found, we're they're going to roll up at our institutions. And I mean, the reality is statistically, the majority of college students, two, four, across the United States aren't living, they're not residential, they're commuters. So students are rolling up to campus and we've provided them this foundation. Here's a peer mentor program. Here are these clubs and organizations that we're going to make sure, have funding, have support. And that ties in, I mentioned that I had attended a great webinar on Wednesday about community college students and that first year experience, and there was a survey data done nationally, and the things students are most disappointed in their first year is making friends. And one of my classes this semester, randomly it just happened, two students sat next to one another on the first day of class, and they both had been very involved. They did not know one another, but they had both been very involved at their high schools in their drama programs. And so, you get to know one another, and I make them do a lot of group stuff. And so they had to do a lot of team things. And both of them wrote in their final exam, the best thing that came out of our class was the other person, that it was. They had made a friend in class. And I thought about how sustaining that was going to be, because on the days you don't want to show up, right? They now have one another, and they were clearly doing a lot of checking in and, well, we're going to this club or what have you. It's there's, you know, that always that, and I think students are really seeking that, especially as we continue to see life bubble out of pandemic. So I love this idea that reducing caregiver fatigue, reducing our hidden emotional labor cost, really means looking at our students from a strength-based perspective where we're giving them the agency to live into the communities that are there, maybe with having to help them connect the dots.
And one of the things, so I teach a couple of classes, and part of it is because my brain, I have age-related cognitive decline, but I play a game with myself, and I ask my students to sit, for the first month. Sit in the same seat, and I draw the seats and I write their names. So, and I tell them by the end of the month, I will know each of your names. And it's because there is something in the human condition, the importance of feeling seen and heard. So I might see Meg, like, hey, Meg, see you on campus, right? But I know your name. And another thing, too, is in my field, we call it dosing. So you don't, when you get to that level of emotional fatigue and you're feeling tired and you feel overwhelmed, that's a very common word, especially this time in the semester, because problems start to pop up, right? In the classroom, in student support services, right? And so it's, they, and you start feeling like, oh my, I'm just overwhelmed. And you maybe feel like, oh, I need to do more. And there's something that we do use with it's a part of trauma-informed care in my mind, and it's dosing. So when you're on medication, the doctor gives you medication and it's dosage. Take one pill every 12 hours or whatever it is. And so how I use dosing is just dropping in, right? So I may walk around the classroom and ask, hey, how are you doing? Not every single time, just in doses. And administrators can walk around campus as weather permits, or go to departments, right? Or go to units and just kind of check in, because being visible and walking up to a counter or going into a department on the instruction side and just, hey, nothing. It's small talk that matters, because it's in the day-to-day ordinary times that people remember. Big things are fun. You have the celebrations and things like that, and more are coming because the fall semester is going to end. But it's in the ordinary, everyday encounters that people actually remember, both as employees and as students. So you're not so it's dosing to take care of your own mental wellness as an employee, and it's also helpful to employees and to students, because it's just a dose, right? It's just, you're just popping in. You're not staying for dinner. You're just popping in, and that really matters. It also helps people feel seen and heard. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think about how could we integrate that meaningfully, right, into our work in a way that isn't, it's not a burden, it's not an additional labor. It's very foundational. I mean, I think, I hope that all of us feel this way. The work that I get to do on a college campus, it certainly can be exhausting at times, but that community of practitioners is what just gets me so excited about. I mean, and it's wonderful to see, the students and things like that. But I work with really smart, thoughtful, caring people who, on those days where you're not feeling as plugged in or you're feeling, the emotional labor and the stress, just you're right, that dose of them is enough to get me, all right, I got this for today.
And it's good to just get out and move your body, right? Just get out and walk around. And probably what I just said is naming what folks are probably already doing, actually. They're already doing. I'm just giving it a name. I just call it dosing.
But I think that one of the things I've seen folks, I think many of us have returned to campus in a working space, but some people are still in a hybrid work situation where maybe they're more isolated working from home. Or your schedules don't align. Or, I mean, think about, like, I'm an adjunct. A lot of adjuncts are very isolated, I think. They're not really, they're kind of part of the college, but they're not really part of, and I do think that when we came back to campus, it was this focus, 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 get the work done, work done, work done. And maybe we've kind of lost some of that ability to dose, to just have that, oh, I'm going to make sure, twice a day when I'm taking a 15-minute break, I'm going to get up, I'm going to go, or I have to go deliver these things to this place. And that's going to be, that opportunity. And I think about how can we also build that in more intentionally. It doesn't have to be the big showy
No.
celebrations.
And those
I
are fun too. Those are fun too. Yeah, but no, this is keep it small and simple and manageable. And when I was teaching full time, this is a time of the semester where I'm like, I can't, I'm not going to make it through the end of the semester. I'm exhausted. I've still got to read papers and, getting frustrated, because I let myself work from the top of the funnel where it's all this stuff versus going to the bottom where keep it small and simple. Right. And I'm an adjunct now too, and I can see the difference of how what when I was full time what I was doing, and then what it means to be, adjunct, and then just developmentally growing into, as you get older and the profession. And so it's keep it small, keep it simple. You are still doing the work. Even, right? You're still doing the work. It doesn't have to be big productions. People remember ordinary, the everyday kinds of things. That's and if you think about yourself, right? You it's the small it's the little things that you remember. Oh, such and such came in, just popped in, said, how asked me about my family. So those are things that we do anyway, but I'm just giving a name. That's all. Just giving a name to what it is. Just small things, small and simple. And that matters to as it's just a part of our human condition. That's still that's seeing people, that's hearing. I mean, students are so excited when they see you out in the community at a store, right? I remember I used to be when I would see a professor, oh my God, you shop? Yeah, I'm a human, and just a hello. You don't have to get into a conversation. Hello, and keep it moving. But just again, those small encounters are very meaningful.
Absolutely. And that's not going to require a lot of labor, a lot of
No,
energy, a lot
no,
of,
no, no.
yeah. So
And we
it,
have community partners to do
right.
that real in-depth emotional work with students. We have community partners, and they are there and available. They can even, and they love coming onto campus and having a space on campus to provide those kinds of services, but to expect employees to do something that they're not trained to do. And again, we're not ever going to have enough mental health professionals, and certainly not licensed ones. So we do paraprofessionals. So there are different, levels, but is that the work of our folks? Now we have counselors in our system, but they are more academic counselors. They typically do not do that kind of work. It may be different in other states, but they don't do that kind of work, and their schedule just really wouldn't allow it anyway. And so how do we as a community college, or just as an institution, become a real part and integrate ourselves into our communities? And that's through partnership and collaboration.
Well, Shannon, I think you've given us a lot to chew over in this conversation today. I mean, we have talked about understanding kind of how we've come to this space as faculty and staff who are just, I know, pouring so much into students, and you've given us some really tangible things. We don't have to be on the board of trustees, be on the college institutional leadership team to enact some small changes, I think, that can really feed us in our work, help us set some healthy boundaries, and at the end of the day, kind of counter some of that fatigue that, and I'm glad we did this in November, because November is just a real kick in the teeth, I think, sometimes in the world of higher education. So I'm glad that you reminded me of that, but also centered that for us, because it is the truth. So, so thank you. So, Shannon, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on today, and for your willingness to have this conversation with us. I think a lot of us, there are great comments in the chat, and just people really felt very lifted up to continue doing the work that we're doing.
Yes. And thank you, and thank all of your listeners for giving me this opportunity. And I want to end with, this is the game time, right? So give yourselves permission to take breaks, to take a vacation day, a mental wellness day. Take care of yourselves, because this is the stretch, and we still got to get to the end of the semester. And I'm saying this for myself too. I'm including myself in this, that give yourselves, because we are not the best in taking care of ourselves, because we're in a system that people are good and want to be helpful. But
Mm
remember, you got to put the oxygen mask on yourselves first before you can be of help to others. So.
Absolutely. Well, Shannon, thank you so much. I do want to let people know December 12th is our last podcast of this year, academic year, and we're going to do our gaze into the reflect on 2025. What a year it's been in higher education. Could not have predicted it in any way, shape, or form in 2024, but we will try to do a little prognostication, break out our crystal ball to look at what might happen in 2026. So I hope you'll join us on December 12th at 12 o'clock Eastern. Shannon, thank you so much. I hope you'll think about coming back on again, that this has been as fun conversation for you today as it has been for me. And have a great weekend, everybody. I hope there's time
Yeah.
for rest and renewal.
Yes, and happy holidays to
Oh,
those that
yes.
celebrate.
Yes, thank you, thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Friday Five Live is brought to you by Innovative Educators. Innovative Educators offers 6 online services for your onboarding support and training needs. Visit us at innovativeeducators.org to see how we can support your student success initiatives.